We've met everybody, so we can just jump right in. So on Michael's presentation, we talked a lot about the private cloud as a deployment model. So the first question, and we'll start with Larry. He had a timeout. So what's going on with the other major cloud deployment models? Briefly, you know, specifically public, hybrid, or some other more exotic ones like virtual private that are worth mentioning before we move on.
My experience is really interfacing with customers and providers who care from a sort of end user experience perspective. And from that perspective, hybrid seems really attractive. Security issues are one of the biggest factors that I've seen as dictating the choice of cloud and how to deploy. There's a balance. There's usually a cost factor that is expressed to us as to sort of choosing between private versus public, but the trade-off is security. Security is a funny thing. Even if you're not the government, you may have a business where you have investors from overseas or elsewhere, and they may be extremely concerned about keeping their sensitive information private, and so sensitive and so concerned that they're willing to incur the cost. So I think, sort of ducking your direct question but answering it a little bit sideways, I think from my perspective, it's always a discussion. The discussion from a customer perspective has nothing to do with public versus private versus virtual. What it has to do with are what are their priorities and what do they need, and then what cloud solutions meet those. And right now, hybrid seems to be the biggest one we're seeing.
Okay, good answer. Michael, what about you?
Well, what we're seeing is, first of all, IT, the people that run the data center, are finally starting to wake up and say, we need to get a handle on the growth, because the DevOps folks and the engineering folks and the marketing folks are out using public cloud. To your point on security, what we're also seeing, I'm going over to Australia in a couple weeks to go speak over there, they want nothing to do with US-based companies. They're so afraid of the security issue and how the US government, their perception the US government can come over and grab their data if that data resides on a US company-based cloud, or that company has, you know, they may have a cloud over in Australia or Canada or England. They want local cloud providers. So whether it's public or private, they're looking for local cloud providers. And that was really eye-opening to me about the development of going forward from a public cloud perspective.
Okay, Kyle?
Yeah, so the weird thing about saying private cloud is that you're assuming that you can scale out, but like in reality, you're getting allocated a block of machines still. Like they're setting you up, they're building you something, they're giving you something flexible for a developer, but it's not the same as a public cloud. And so Rackspace in particular, like we have a private cloud offering, we have public cloud, you can link the two together and we can do dedicated servers. Right, and mishmash all of them. And depending on how you use us, there's, you either are handling the security aspects or we're managing it for you. And as IT groups are growing and they'd actually like to work on their business and their applications, they find out it would be much better to outsource just the data center operations and maybe not the engineering around it or the sysadmin work.
Okay. Mike?
Yeah, to Kyle's point, I think, you know, we used to see people saying that the cloud, they wanted to use cloud for overflow, right? For excess capacity, for the situation when they overrun their internal capacity. The price points are becoming such that that's not necessarily the first choice these days for the very reasons that Kyle mentioned. We're seeing many companies actually go directly to a cloud provider, or in some cases, people building out their own clouds and really, really investing, you know, significantly to do that appropriately. But the smaller shops, it isn't so much about excess capacity or overflow anymore. They seem to be going directly, you know, to the public cloud environments.
Okay, Marty, can I just follow Mike?
Okay.
Just Mike, to follow up a comment you made about the localized nature mm-hmm. that you're experiencing. Marty and I were in another webinar recently, and I reported on a case, the Microsoft case. I don't know if you heard about it. in Ireland, but their solution was, in order to harmonize the disparate requirements of European versus US data, all the Snowden freaking out, and the notion that you could avoid some of those problems by housing your data, in this case in an Irish data center.
Mm-hmm.
They were compelled, nevertheless, to turn over data in an investigation to U.S. law enforcement authorities under a case that they're now appealing, I think, to the Circuit Court of Appeals. And the court ruled that there were hybrid provisions associated with subpoenas versus warrants that would allow the government to actually get at data that was under Microsoft's control.
Yep.
As a U.S. company, even if the data was physically located in Ireland. So I think it's really crazy what you're saying. I've heard that a lot about the notion that locality solves the problem, but it's still sort of an area in evolution and flux actively right now.
Yeah, because you look at Microsoft and Amazon, the two, and Google, the world's biggest public cloud providers, they're all US-based companies. And what we're seeing internationally is, we'll put some of our stuff there, but we won't put anything that could potentially be sensitive in those companies because they are American-based, and we're afraid of the reach of the U.S. government to be able, because they're American companies.
I mean, I think the bigger solution, which may be scary in terms of how challenging it is for policies, both domestically in terms of legislation and international treaties that they're negotiating with the EU to handle and reconcile these, because that's sort of a kludge solution that it hasn't worked in one instance for Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's a really important issue.
And it's
good
key
for lawyers.
Technology,
we can have virtual jurisdictions now.
Yeah, technology has outpaced our government's ability to understand it.
Correct. Once again. So during the conference, we're looking at three sectors of the economy: government, military, media and entertainment, healthcare and life sciences. Does it make any difference? I mean, in those three sectors, is one deployment model, you know, rushing ahead of the others in terms of acceptance? I mean, let's just see what kind of comments or insights you have into that kind of general observation. Start with Michael.
So, I mean, the media has been, especially from a storage perspective, far and away just large adoption of, and your example of transcoding is where I first started seeing just the use of that technology and cloud technology to start putting that data up there. They were one of the early adopters. We're seeing government trying to get their hands around it, but the government just doesn't move as quickly as others.
Okay. Kyle?
One thing about government that might be unfair is that the government is big, and so there will be agencies that are early adopters, and then there will be ones that we won't see for years from now. Government at large is like a different thing. It's almost like saying, is the American industry, as all the businesses, are they rushing to cloud, is like a different kind of question. For defense, I know there have been people that have been adopting OpenStack and adopting those open standards. And my personal opinion there for government is, if you came in to do civic service, that you will continue to do public good by working with software that will be interoperable everywhere in open source.
Good answer. Mike?
Yeah, we actually work with all three of those sectors pretty heavily. And certainly, you know, government, as far as cloud goes, they're slower to adopt. Media entertainment has always kind of, you know, led the pace there. But even in life sciences, we're seeing a lot of adoption now, you know, especially with the ability to operate on that big data with things like, you know, Hadoop clusters and that kind of thing, you know, in the cloud. So life sciences is strong and coming up. There's another industry that we're actually seeing a lot of traction, and that's oil and gas. You'd be surprised how much data the oil and gas industry produces. And there's some huge efforts in that industry to take advantage of the cloud going on there.
Interesting. Larry, do you have anything else?
I would just sort of echo what they said and point out the government should fit. I heard $85 billion a year in IT spend. Great demand, but cumbersome, wrapping with FedRAMP and FISMA around the data issues. Media is sexy and entrepreneurial, so it makes sense that they've been going whole hog. Healthcare, I think it fits dramatically, but again, data privacy and security issues are a challenge, which I think are increasingly starting to get solved as companies from Microsoft to many others are learning HIPAA, learning business associate agreements, and learning some of the solutions to make healthcare work.
We're lucky to have a real live software engineer on this panel with extensive experience in Python, web programming, distributed systems. So the question is, are there key differences in software languages that make some better than others for cloud-based solutions? The only person we want to ask that is Kyle. Probably not Larry.
I wrote punt.
So as far as language is concerned, there's not one language that will rule them all. Some people will probably go ahead and say it's JavaScript now that it's on the server and the client and has been for years.
Not even Kyle.
What's that? Because you can containerize your entire app and you can profile it to whatever degree you want, you can work with whatever your developers want to work in, they should do that. And then you have to scale around that. And if they have to switch to Go or they have to switch to Node, fine. Like, everybody should just build microservices around all the pieces they need.
So what about databases then? I mean, that brings up not only the programming languages, but the databases they're going to be using.
Yeah, there are the industry hardened, battle hardened databases that people have been using for Postgres, right? And then there's NoSQL databases that have the right applications. Like, people have been using Elasticsearch for document indexing for a while, and it has great performance. And largely speaking, you can treat it like a black box to get started with, right? Pardon my language here, but it's like databases like those are the crack cocaine that will lead on to just like warehousing everything. You're like, wow, it's really easy to throw everything in Mongo. Wow, it's really easy to get started with Elasticsearch.
Yeah, and I just wonder what the future of the SQL, the Oracles of the world, and how cloud might change kind of how people develop in the future.
I think if everything's a commodity, we're going to find that if the databases are a commodity and they're easy to spin up, you're not going to want to go deal with a contract to go get a database started. Your developer's just going to do it.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Marty. I didn't mean to take over.
No, it's good.
But,
no, thank you.
But I see a lot of the change with the startups and how they're interacting with the technology and how they're doing things differently and how that's going to evolve over the next 5-10 years.
So believe it or not, I actually still write a lot of code, okay? And I'm a big believer that with my team that I'm only going to be able to lead that team if I'm in the trenches with them quite a bit. So I I'm technology agnostic. And so I'm a very big advocate of any language or platform that the developers choose to use. It's very interesting you mentioned JavaScript, because I was going to mention that. I was going to say JavaScript as something that is kind of come full circle and is available everywhere. But what we see a lot of Java.NET, C++, C++ not as much anymore, or C, but then certainly JavaScript. There's one other thing I wanted to touch on. You saw the demo that I gave with the receiver and the sender. You know how much code that we wrote to carry that out? Zero. So I want to bring up one other aspect to this, and that's providing tools that allow for automation. Okay. And so what you actually saw there were things interacting with each other via standard I/O. Right? So just standard in and standard out, so you can actually pipe data in from one process to another and that kind of thing. So these you can't underestimate the value of automation tools in conjunction with native languages as well.
Okay, let's get off of that one, right? Let's change gears a little bit. Looking at the media and entertainment sector, and one of the other tracks we're covering, mobile cloud, which translates in that instance to like content everywhere, like TV everywhere and things like that. How is that going? What kind of signs of progress do you see, or what kind of obstacles do you see keeping it from developing? Let's see, let's start with Michael this time.
probably going to defer on this because I'm not the media and entertainment, but what we see from it, just applications that were written to live in an old environment don't work well without rewrite in a mobile environment.
That's very true.
Sorry, I can certainly talk. So, right, if we look at how Nielsen collected data before, right, they had the set-top boxes, and it was, you know, particular families were Nielsen families, and they were doing classic statistical sampling, and so they had to extract out what's the rest of everyone doing. And now they're at a point, I mean, so we talk about Hulu and other media groups, they get to collect data on every single viewer and determine how they interacted with a commercial, and that's a lot more data than they had before. It's a dream to a statistician, and it should be a dream to all the business leaders too. And they now have to figure out how to process that, how to deal with the events, how they're, you know, what are they going to track? It's totally different landscape than before.
Very important, very different. Mike?
Yeah, so I agree with what's been said, and it's not, you can't always take the same applications as has been said, right, and you know, have them work to the best extent possible in a mobile environment. And to that end, one of the things that we did is we actually, you know, ported our technology. We actually, not port is the wrong word. We actually created mobile APIs for things and for our technology. And I think you could apply this to any technology, not just ours. That people want that native experience on whatever platform they're working with. You know, typically. So to the extent that you can, you know, develop to provide that best experience. Now, one of the issues with mobile previously, especially in media entertainment, has been, you know, network, right? How do I stay connected, right, in challenged environments? You may be on a movie shoot in the middle of nowhere, right? What kind of connectivity do I have? Well, so these are some of the bottlenecks that have had to have been overcome, and applications themselves have to be written to be resilient to those factors.
Larry, last word.
Yeah, I was going to echo, actually, the network point. And it's not just the existence of 4G LTE, which itself is a problem, but we've got this insane and exponential increasing demand on mobile networks. So we're getting bottlenecks at other places. So if your wireless signal goes to a tower, then you've got to truck that signal and aggregate it from the tower to a central point of interconnection. And the Verizons and AT&Ts of the world are having huge challenges for getting last mile and sort of bandwidth connectivity from towers to the points of interconnection. So bandwidth is one. And of course the lawyers are mucking it up too, because it's not my area of specialty, but there are rights that need to be negotiated in order to allow that content to shift to mobile. And so connectivity and legal are the two areas I would identify.
Good ones. Did anyone have a question? Do you have a question?
This is sort of generic. Physical presence offsite. I mean, right now, still the thing, application level security is probably the most, core aspect. And when you talk about enterprises and their fear to move to the cloud, can we just dig into that a little bit, what you're seeing in the marketplace? It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Good question. Who wants to go first?
I'll go ahead and start. you know, it's funny, you know, the saying, you know, perception is reality. I think that's really a lot with what we're dealing with, is people have this perception that, you know, cloud environments can't be secure if I don't have control over it. Well, while that's true, ultimately, I think, you know, enterprises need to take a look at their own policies and compare those policies to the policies of the cloud providers themselves. And they just might realize that the cloud providers have better security than they do. Now, you know, some of the recent events with, you know, iCloud and such don't help us, anybody, some of the public events, but
which is almost like a completely different sense of cloud too.
It is. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, but yeah, I think over time, this is one of those subjects that's just going to take some time for people to overcome. Like I said, I've seen huge inroads made in media and entertainment with regard to leveraging cloud. It's quite a bit. There's, you know, one project that we worked on called, Sony C. It's C, which is, you know, kind of editing in the cloud with some assets that are very strategic, and they don't want to let out, and they've implemented appropriate security around them. So I think it's a lot of education needs to happen before we can overcome this.
So I think the difference between, so let's say you have your team at an enterprise company that's working, and maybe they even run their own cloud, they have a hypervisor. So assuming they know about the patches that are coming down the wire, so just today, the Xen vulnerability that has basically been out and about for the last few days, but not publicly talked about, but not released, like it was being patched by Amazon, it was being patched by Rackspace, but they could not talk about it until the embargo was lifted. It has now been lifted. Your IT shop will not know about that issue with the Xen hypervisor, unless Citrix chose to tell them. Like, there are those awkward political environments, but then also somebody has to go and patch them and handle it. So if the worry was, who's patching my systems, what do they have access to, like, that is a different thing. Like, if you want your people to touch your data and your servers, like, you can make no guarantee, I think, unless you're hosting yourself. But you have to trust those people, too.
It's kind of the same thing with even the recent batch vulnerability, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same type of thing. But everybody's vulnerable to it, not just the cloud providers.
Yep.
Right? So I think to your point.
The question, just to be clear, is saying there's some big buckets. Like, there's obvious concern moving stuff out of our building into somebody else's building. That's one level. There's another level of network access.
Is it a private, is it my private intranet, or is it now has connected to a public, network infrastructure? That's a second level I could see. The third then gets into things like, let's just call it middleware, patching, consistency, and then the fourth level is applications. And so all four of those obviously have aspects of security, but I'm guessing the question I had was, of those four buckets, if we describe that framework, where's the concern that you're seeing in the marketplace? Is it all across the board? Is it more at network access? I mean, because
if people are not talking about the fourth one, because that's basically up to your own developers.
Exactly.
I mean, they can detect things at a network level.
Yeah.
So, like, if they can tell that a DDoS is happening, right, your traffic can be, that the traffic that's coming from can be null routed. But, like, if there is a vulnerability in your own application, like, a cloud provider's no idea. It's like, it's your own deal.
And so then you have the aspect of the actual cloud. Is it instantiated in the enterprise, or is it instantiated in some hosted facility? And that's, so when I think of cloud security, if you really want to get specific, the thing that's distinct would be actually within the cloud, within that upper layer tier, which I don't hear anybody talking about. So that's sort of the irony that, and I just want to make sure that, unless I'm missing something, you guys have some other insight into customers having real concerns. I don't understand it.
Yeah. I think the customers do have real concerns. And I know, and I make the same pitch that my fellow panelists have made, that you're actually better off in the cloud. But that, A, is counterintuitive for a lot of customers who are probably not as technologically adept as we are. And you can blame the lawyers and the Europeans, because the Europeans and probably most of the rest of the world has heightened the scrutiny on privacy and personal information, and the consequences now of a breach are ratcheted up substantially. So it's not just a private industry, whether my data, my sensitive data could get out there, but it's like the regulators are saying, and by the way, we're gonna like slam you if it happens. And there are really bad guys out there who are trying to hack in and make money. So I think it's an evolving area. I think ultimately I can agree with the notion that you're probably better off on all these layers with a company whose sole mission is to secure your data. But I think we're in an evolutionary period for the next 2 to 4 or 5 years where the policymakers and the techies are going to have to kind of get together and figure it out. I think the good news is that this industry has so much momentum behind it right now that there are literally comments made in these policy or legal discussions that we want to make cloud work. We want to figure out how to develop policies associated with promoting cloud. So I think it's trending in the right direction, but it's far from settled.
There's a couple of points that, you know, I'm always trying to hammer home to people, and one of them is application developers cannot assume that the network security people are going to take care of any of the vulnerabilities that might exist.
Right.
Conversely, network administrators can't assume application developers take care of it, you know, either. So it is that there are both sides to it, and you know you're only as good as the weakest link, right?
Good point. Right here.
With some sophisticated policies in place, because, for example, they're a publicly traded company, and the board came down and said, you have to have a policy about how you handle your data. And the IT people go, okay, well, let's see. High-impact data can't go in the cloud. Low-impact data, you know, can go in the cloud. There's the policy. Okay, so that's good, right? But then the question is, well, you've already copied this piece of high-impact data into the cloud. Why don't we just build a solution on that in the cloud? Oh, no, that's breaking the rules, right? Even though it's already there. Oh, but it's already in a cloud offering that your company actually offers. Well, it's still breaking the rules, right? So what I'm saying is I think the conversation is rightly about data. It's rightly about protecting the data. The data is fundamentally what matters. The problem is that then you're running into the bureaucratic issues, right? Okay, so we're having the conversation about the right thing, but the conversation just hasn't had enough time for the gears to turn and for the sensible things to start to happen. And I think that's, as an industry, where we are right now, is the sophisticated IT shops, they understand that the conversation is about data, and they're still trying to work through the old rules to adopt the new stuff. And I think they need help with that.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that and say, yeah, I really do agree. I really think it is about the data. And some of the barriers will be regulations that are in place. So it's not just policies, it might be regulations as well. When you start to deal with things like private health information, for instance, you know, you have regulations about, you really do have to have your hands around who has access to that data at any point in time. So if you start moving that data to the cloud, you can only go so far to saying who has access to that data, because everybody knows anybody who's got physical access, who's actually looking the on-device stuff in the cloud, can actually potentially have access to that data. And so these become the concerns, and I don't think we've had enough conversations around how that can be handled. But if we had that conversation and we came up with a structure that would make folks comfortable and there were policies in place, I think we'll be able to move forward past this.
Yeah, but there's this sort of iterative relationship between real world and regulation. So if you were an investor in Target before they had their big breach, you lost a lot of money. And a guy who was making $36 million a year as their CEO lost his job. So then you see the SEC says, you know what, for publicly traded companies, we're going to actually require you as part of your 10Q, 10K disclosures to tell us about what you've done to secure your data. And are there any breaches, which drives the lawyers crazy? And the directors of those companies are now looking at their D&O insurance and saying, geez, could we get sued for this? Again, I think there's a balance. I think there's a little bit of overkill that's going on right now in the regulatory side. There's a little fear of the unknown. But there's this iterative relationship between regulation and real world issues that we're in the middle of right now.
Okay, well, I want to thank the panel. Good job. And take a little stretch break, and this will resume right at 1 o'clock. So if you didn't get lunch yet, please go ahead and do that. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.